Welcome to the 1-0 podcast, hosted by Joe Cook and Brad Kellner. The 1-0 podcast is part of the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast channel. And today, after a little bit of a layoff due to some weather and other things out of our control, we are going to talk about Texas hot recruiting February, even amidst the cold weather, Texas Longhorns basketball as it is in the final week of its regular season and looking to solidify its spot as a four seed or better in the NCAA tournament. Then we'll also talk a little bit about Texas baseball and how they have done over the first few weeks of the season. Be sure to listen to our show, the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, hosted by Kevin Dunn and Paul Wadlington. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a review and let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about more. You can also let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about by sending us an email at everyone@gmail.com. That's everyone@gmail.com. And of course, the 1-0 podcast would not be possible without following sponsors.
Audio visual consultations. Give them a call, 512-255-8678, to get the home TV setup of your dreams. We're going to be talking a lot of Texas football on today's show. I think fans are excited about the future of the Longhorns. If you want to get your TV setup done by the time football season rolls around, call AV Consultations and let them take care of your home. 512-255-8678. And the 1-0 podcast is also brought to you by Altstadt Brewery, Altstadt Beer. It is German beer made here and the best beer that you can find all across Central Texas. Also available all over the DFW Metroplex and the Houston areas as well. It is the official beer of the 1-0 podcast. It should be the official beer of you as well. It's Altstadt Beer. No impurities, no regrets.
Now, Brad, I'm going to put you on the spot right here when we talk about Texas basketball. We're recording this the night after the Longhorns took care of business up in Ames, one of three games, I believe, in 7 days or 6 days for the Longhorns ahead of the Big 12 tournament. And it's something that's kind of been bouncing around on the Inside Texas message board. And I've kind of had a strong viewpoint on it. And I know you, and I'm interested to hear what yours is as well. And I know that even coming into this year, probably after last year and probably after the year prior, you were ready to be done with Shaka Smart. You were ready for Texas to bite the bullet, pay that buyout, say thank you for your time at Texas, but we're trying to go in a separate direction. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done that. And I think there are people who still believe that, and I think you probably still believe that too. So my question is, do you think it's possible to still have that opinion on Shaka Smart, also recognizing that this is still a good to almost great season, approaching great season, or is it all just kind of undone by the fact that it's still Shaka leading the way despite being in the top 20 for most of the, if not all the year?
Look, I would love to eat my words, but the only way I'm going to eat my words is if Shaka Smart makes a deep tournament run this year. And I think the expectation for Texas fans should be a trip to the second weekend, right? With the combination of talent and experience on this roster and your coach in year six, it feels like Sweet 16 should be the minimum bar for Texas fans this year. And maybe they can get there, right? They've got a shot to be a top four seed in the NCAA tournament. But Joe, as of late, we have seen a lot of familiar signs from this Texas basketball team, right? Some things that we saw from Shaka Smart's teams over the first 5 years of his tenure are starting to rear its ugly head. So, look, it's college basketball. I'm a huge proponent of the sport, and I hate being this guy because I want fans to watch college basketball from November on, right? But I know how it works in this sport. Your success is determined by what happens in the month of March. Conference tournaments, but more specifically, the Big Dance, the NCAA tournament. So even if Texas wins its final two games, and hey, maybe they win a couple of games in the conference tournament as well, it's all going to be for naught, Joe, if the Longhorns don't make it to at least the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. So yeah, even though this has been a pretty good year, especially compared to Shaka Smart's first 5 years, right? This is far and away the best team and the best year that they've had. It really doesn't matter to me, and I don't think it should matter to Texas fans what they've done to this point. It really just matters what they're going to accomplish over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at it. To be honest with you, I completely understand, you know, after last year, I think after last year was when I was really willing to do it because I just thought that there would be a better balance on the team, and you know, they were fighting for their tournament life at the end of the year. So I think after last year is when I really would have understood it. But I think the prevailing notion was, well, COVID happened, so we might as well strap up one more time and see what happens and let that buyout drop a little bit more and more. So I completely understand that. Now, here's another thing. You talked about getting to the second weekend, and I think that this is, you know, if for a team that's been in the top 20, top 15, heck, even the top five at certain portions of the year, yeah, they have to be able – they should be able to get to the second weekend. Do you think that the fact that literally the top seven teams in the Big 12 are in the top 20, that fact, do you think that, you know, by going through this rough regular season schedule, we always talk about how tough the Big 12 is, but I think what Texas Tech was seventh in the conference, but 17th in the country, something like that. Do you think that because of the rough schedule in the early portions of this year, that once they get to the tournament, I know that there are going to be some good teams, but if they stay on that four line, they're probably going to get a 13 seed who had to go through their conference tournament and might be a bid stealer. So do you think it's, even though that the second weekend, the kind of second weekend or bust, do you see that almost as a you know, pretty attainable considering what they've had to play through this year, not just with COVID pauses, but just the quality of competition they've dealt with?
Yeah, they're definitely battle-tested, and you want that going into the NCAA tournament, right? It helps playing in a high-major conference like the Big 12, and in my mind, the Big 12 is the best conference in college hoops this year. So they've played a lot of very, very good teams, which should get them ready for March. The problem is, Joe, this team is, what, two games over 500 in conference play? I guess now they're 9-6 in conference play, but as of late, they've really struggled. They're 5-6 in their last 11 games, and the teams that they've been playing, yeah, in the first round, they'll get a 13 seed or a 12 seed, and they'll obviously be more talented on paper than the team they play in that first round. But in the second round, let's assume the Longhorns are a 4, which is where Joe Lunardi has them slotted right now. The Longhorns are likely to play a 5 seed, and a 5 seed's going to be relatively similar in talent to Texas. And Texas, as of late, has struggled more often than not against teams with relatively similar talent. So, yes, you'd prefer to be battle-tested going into the tournament, but I don't know if it necessarily guarantees any sort of success come March. And if I may, Joe, look, this might be a conversation we need to elaborate on after the year comes to a close, but you start projecting forward beyond this year, because we're trying to figure out if Shaka Smart should be brought back for a seventh year, and then obviously beyond that. What's this team going to look like next year? Like, let's say this team does win a tournament game. Maybe they win two tournament games. Maybe they do get to a Sweet 16, and that'll be Texas's first trip to a second weekend since 2008. So for a lot of people, and my guess is for the administration, that's going to be enough to keep Shaka Smart around for another year. But think about who's going to be gone from this year's team, right? Matt Coleman, he's a senior. Now, he could come back. These guys could come back with the eligibility waiver, but my best guess is Matt Coleman's going to be gone. Jericho Sims is going to be gone. Hell, there was a chance he left after last year. I think he surprised some folks by deciding to come back for his senior season. So I expect those two guys to be gone. I think Kai Jones is going to be gone. He's a projected top 15, top 20 pick in the NBA draft. I think Greg Brown, he's going to be gone. He's a projected first-round pick in the NBA draft as well. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Andrew Jones decides to move on after this year. That guy's been at Texas forever. Now, do I think he could use another year, and do I think another year could help him improve his draft stock? Yes, but what, he's already 22? I mean, he's already pretty old coming out of college by NBA standards, so maybe he's gone as well. Like, my point is, Joe, even if Texas does some things this year, it feels like the guys who are most responsible or who will be most responsible for this team's success are all going to be gone next year. And it's like, what does the future look like for Texas basketball? Is this just going to be a 1 year where, hey, maybe you win a tournament game or two, and then you're back to where you were the first few years of Shaka Smart, where it's you're pretty much on the bubble the whole time, or you're not even on the bubble, which was the case for a couple of Shaka Smart years? So that's a question, like, I hope UT Brass is asking itself. I don't know if they are, because it's basketball. They don't care about basketball as much as they do football. We know that. They don't care about basketball as much as they do baseball. We know that as well. But hopefully those questions are being asked, Joe. And for me, I have a high bar. I have a high expectation for Texas basketball. I know we're not one of the most historic blue blood type programs in the history of the sport, but man, with the resources this school has, the new stadium coming in a couple of years, it feels like fans and the administration should have higher expectations than just, I don't know, one tournament win or two tournament wins in 6 years for a head coach. So hopefully those questions are being asked too, and it's not just, what does Shaka Smart do this year? You've got to look to the future when making decisions like this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all those guys, people may be hearing like Andrew Jones going, Matt Coleman going, you know, it makes complete sense. 4 years at an institution, as we learned with Sam Ehlinger, is a long time. And I think the broadcast with King McClure and whoever was doing the play-by-play during the Iowa State game, they mentioned that the Iowa State point guard, maybe it was point guard, maybe it was Coleman Lamb, they were talking about, this is his sixth year. And they asked, like, hey, you want to come back for the seventh year? And there was a pretty obvious answer in his body language. At least that's what was relayed on the broadcast. So a lot of these guys want to go. And, again, it's not like the NFL where there's only one and then kind of another league in the CFL. You can play all over the world. Cam Ridley's still playing, I believe, in Japan. Connor Lambert, I believe, is playing. Heck, you know, Isaiah Taylor, I think, if he's bouncing between the G League or somewhere else, P.J. Tucker made a career out of it before he made it to the NBA. So there are opportunities for, I think, everybody that you just mentioned, really, whether it be the NBA or somewhere else, to get paid to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And that's a really strong allure. And then and the other thing that means is that this team is going to be composed of Courtney Ramey at guard and then the 2021 recruiting class. And there are some good pieces in that recruiting class. But relying on a lot of freshmen who aren't, you know, special elite talents is going to be a little tough. And I know that guys like Tamar Bates and Amarian Ellis are doing pretty well. And the guys, I think David Joplin and Kian Ikejeri are the more developmental guys. But, you know, there's a lot of spots opening up on this roster next year, and maybe even more than we realize. And they're going to have to dip all over the place, transfers, yeah. Everywhere, you know, because of the overall churn that this roster is going to have next year. So I think, yeah, you definitely have to take that into consideration. Also, I would wonder, you know, I think Smart is stubborn, and I don't think that's a bad thing for a coach. So I think a lot of people thinking like, oh, you know, maybe Texas would soft landing him somewhere else, find him a new role. I don't know how feasible that is, but I also don't know if that's something Shaka Smart himself would want to do. I mean, coaches are all stubborn. They all think that their system works and they can win where they're at. They're not going to tap out and quit on that and just say, you know what, start it over. They're going to try and go with what they know. So, yeah, I think that your consideration is in the arena. That's, you know, even though the Oakview Group is paying for a pretty much all of it, and the Moody's put their name on it, that's still something that you have to sell tickets for and fill. Now, it's not as many tickets as the Irwin Center, but you still got to get them. And it's probably going to be a little bit more expensive considering this is a nice new place and not a cruddy old 50-year-old flan, as you call it.
Easy.
So I think you have to take all that into account. But at the same time, what you really have to take into account is just how this team finishes. It's all going to be proven on the court more than things off the court. And, you know, we may have our pretty well-informed ideas of how it will go on the court, but who knows? That's also why they play the game.
And there will be no flan slander on this podcast, okay? That is unacceptable, Joe. Now, I want to ask you this. I want to bring it back to this year's team. Maybe I'm stealing your question, so I'm sorry for putting you on the spot before you could put me on the spot. What are your expectations for Texas basketball the rest of the way? I mean, they've got two more games in the regular season, one of them against a good team. That's at Oklahoma tomorrow night, Thursday night. Then they've got a trip to Fort Worth on Sunday. That's a very winnable game. Texas should beat TCU. The Horned Frogs, they're not making the tournament. You could argue they've mailed it in. They just got stomped by Texas Tech last night. I don't think they're very good. So one more real opportunity in the regular season to prove themselves, and then obviously the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournament. Let's just focus on the NCAA tournament for now. I mean, with what you've seen from this team, they started 10-1. Of course, they got all the way up to number 4 in the country. At that point, there were conversations about Texas being a one seed, and you felt like, hey, man, maybe this team really can make a legitimate run come March. But as of late, they've obviously fallen on some tougher times. COVID definitely a part of that. The ice storm, you could argue, a part of that as well, that prevented some practices, that delayed some games. So a lot of unforeseen factors definitely playing a role in this team's struggles, but they have struggled a little bit lately, especially against quality competition. So we're talking about Sweet 16 teams, Joe. For me, the way I'm watching this team play right now, I don't think this is a Sweet 16 team. Now, maybe they're a 4 seed, and they beat the 13, and they get lucky, and a 12 beats a 5, so they get to play two double-digit seeds in the first two rounds, and maybe they can take care of business against those two teams. But for me, the way this team has played lately, Joe, I do not see this as a second-weekend team. Where are you at right now with this Horn squad?
I think looking forward over the before the NCAA tournament, I think they took care of business with Iowa State, bad team that had, you know, that they played just as they should have played them. But after Iowa State, I think that they need to win at least 3 more games before the NCAA tournament starts. And that's within either these next couple regular season games with Oklahoma and TCU, and then one more in the Big 12 tournament. Or if they split these next 2 games, I think they really need to get 2 in the Big 12 tournament to lock up that 4 seed. Because you've seen, I forget where I saw this point, so I wish I could credit whoever had it, but there's a pretty sizable difference between a 12 seed and a 13 seed over the data shows over the years. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of 12 over 5s. You don't see as many 13 over 4s. And of course, you know, that's statistics, but still, 12-5 is basically everybody's favorite upset pick.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they definitely need to get to the, you know, win 3 more games ahead of them before the Big 12 tournament or before the NCAA tournament starts. Of course, you want to defeat your rival. You want to defeat Oklahoma. And defeating them would actually help your tournament resume a lot and probably solidify you as a 4 seed. And then if you win these next 2 games against TCU and Oklahoma, you're probably good. You should want to win one more in the Big 12 tournament. But here's the thing. Texas doesn't need to go far in the Big 12 tournament. They've got their spot in the NCAA tournament locked up. And I know you want to play and win the games in front of you, but at the same time, and we just talked about this, if you're Shaka Smart, it's all about the NCAA tournament. You know, that is what the important thing is at this point in his career. So, yeah. And then as far as getting to that second weekend, like you mentioned, yeah, maybe he gets a 13 and then he gets a 12. You know what? That's fine. You got to play the teams in front of you.
Sure.
That's no fault on Shaka Smart, although I am aware of what it may mean for some people who are more stronger detractors than you or I of him. But, like, still, you play the teams in front of you, and the accomplishments are the accomplishments. I'll go into the Irwin Center and see some banners from I'm not sure when and see all these, you know, Final Four or all these Sweet 16s or Elite Eights. I won't really remember exactly what seed it was who they played. I'll just kind of see that it was a Sweet 16 or Elite Eight.
Yeah.
So, of course, the decision makers have to go a little bit further in detail than that. But to get to your overall question, I think they should need to win at least 3 more games before the NCAA tournament starts. You put a number one priority on beating Oklahoma. And then after that, like I mentioned, get your rest, get your legs, get everything ready, get healthy. Don't, unfortunately, kind of, I guess you have to bubble up in Austin. And then get ready to go play some AAU ball in Indianapolis.
Yeah, for the record, I think Texas could finish anywhere between a 3 seed and a 6 seed. Now, that could be the case for the Big 12 tournament, right? But I'm talking in terms of NCAA tournament seed lines. Like, if Texas goes on a run here and they win these final 2 regular season games and they go to the final or win the Big 12 Conference Tournament in Kansas City, I think they can rise to a 3. But if things don't go well, if Texas drops the next 2 games and maybe is an early out in KC, I think at worst the Longhorns could be a 6 seed. So that to me is the range where Texas falls right now. If I had to predict, I think Texas is going to be a 5. Now, I agree with the scenario you laid out. If Texas wins 3 more games, then I think they'll probably be a 4. But I don't feel great about this team's chances tomorrow in Norman. And then once again, I mean, they're going to play somebody good in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, unless they fall to a 7 seed, which I'm not sure is mathematically even possible at this point. They're going to play somebody decent in the first round, and I don't know if I could pick Texas to win that game. So we'll see, man. We will see a lot to be decided with this basketball team. I'm just glad they're in the mix, Joe. I mean, this is way more fun than where we were last year, right? Where it's like you're just worried about resumes and you're worried about the bubble and, oh my God, we have to win this game, otherwise we're not even going to be in the dance. Like, it's way more exciting and way more fun as a fan to be worried about, you know, where you're going to fall seed line wise, right, between a 3 or 6 than having to worry about whether or not you're going to make the tournament and are you going to be in Dayton playing the first 4 and whatever. So major upgrade this year. And oh, by the way, just having a tournament is going to be a major upgrade versus last year.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I don't have the AV consultation set up you do, but I've got a bunch of screens laying around my house that I think that first weekend I'm going to be couch bound and having a fantastic time and really appreciative of that. And like you mentioned, man, you know what words I have not said in 2021? Last 4 in.
Yeah.
And man, that is so refreshing to not have to say that string of words when talking about Texas basketball. And I think we've summed it up. Like, yeah, you can appreciate this season for what it is, still see the flaws in the team, but still think and know that, hey, they're going to make the dance, and they are setting themselves up for, you know, a chance. And they haven't had those over the past few years. Anything else, or is that good as far as the round ball goes? We can get into a little pigskin.
Let's do it, man. Beat OU, first of all, in basketball and in football. But, let's talk some football, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, so although the month of February had a whole host of things happen in the city of Austin, including losing power, losing water, getting frozen, living on the North Pole, going to see the Zilker Tundra, it was a big month on the recruiting trail for the Longhorns. They added, within the month of February, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different commits. And the headliner of those commits, of course, is Gardena, California, Junipero Serra High School quarterback Malik Murphy. And this, I think a lot of people, when they first saw Malik Murphy, a name I saw thrown around with Malik Murphy, at least in a comparison, which is the recruiting world always has comparisons,
oh, yeah,
was Tyrone Swoops. And I just have to say, I think that comparison could not be more off. Of course, Tyrone Swoops was, what, 6'4", 6'5". He ended up playing around, 240, almost 250 while at Texas. And although Malik is 6'4", it will probably play around 230 at Texas, their games could not be more different. Let's remember that Tyrone Swoops was on a team that was not successful. And it wasn't because of Swoops' efforts. I think he has like a top 5 rushing yards game in Texas high school football history. It was just what was around him. And there's some criticism with Malik Murphy. The biggest one is that he just hasn't done it in games. But we watched Tyrone Swoops play. We knew he had a cannon, you know, but that cannon was actually a form of a shotgun. You didn't really know where that thing was going to go whenever he fired it up. I think the opposite is true for Malik Murphy. And I was able, luckily, to go to a 7-on-7 event just outside of Las Vegas and also was able to see him throw live with quarterback trainer during his, you know, self-guided Austin visit. He was out at Del Valle High School throwing routes. And this is a guy who, I know it's against air, and I know there's no rush or anything like that, but he made it look easy. And 7-on-7, he made it look easy. And he even knows that he has to prove it in a game. It's huge for him this year. They have a 6-game season out in California. He knows how big they are, how big this proof is, this season is to prove it. But overall on Murphy, this is a guy who has a lot of pull on the West Coast. This is someone that everybody in that Southern California, Los Angeles area kind of knows about, has an allure, and, you know, they know because of how hyped up and special he could be as a prospect. So I know that the real prize, at least in-state for quarterbacks, is Quinn Ewers. A&M has their quarterback. They got Connor Weidman. Clemson has their quarterback from the Austin area after getting Cade Klubnik, and there's still a few more scattered throughout the Austin, Houston, and DFW areas. But Sarkisian wanted to go out west, made some connections, leveraged some of his connections, and got a very, very high-quality quarterback from the Golden State.
That Tyrone Swoops comparison just killed me, Joe. I mean, I died a little bit inside.
It couldn't be more off, in my opinion.
I hadn't heard any of those comps before. You know, I had heard that Malik Murphy's nickname out west was Baby Cam, for Cam Newton. And that excited the hell out of me. Yeah, I mean, that excited the hell out of me. But I want to see it to you, right? I mean, like, you've seen him twice in person. I have seen him zero times in person. So, I mean, hearing that he's not Tyrone Swoops is a good thing. Hearing that he's not Cam Newton is not as good of a thing. But it sounds like you're pretty high on the kid from what you've seen to this point.
I don't know how he will be utilized running the football, at least at the high school level. If we've seen anything from Sark, it's that their vision of what the quarterback does and Tom Herman's vision of what the quarterback does is way different.
Yeah.
Tom Herman uses him in the run game. Steve Sarkisian does not prefer to do that, you know, unless it's a wrinkle. It's a wrinkle and not a staple.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think and Steve Sarkisian would go after Malik Murphy if it wasn't for his passing ability, or at least perceived passing ability. Now, he's athletic. He's a big dude. You know, he can move around in the pocket and stuff like that. I don't think he's going to be running over guys like Cam did for Auburn or for Blinn. I don't think he's going to be running over and around guys like he did in that 2015 MVP season.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he's going to be doing is, you know, making throws, accurate throws all over the field, at least, you know, with the highest expectation. I think 247 had a comparison to him as someone like Jameis. And I think that's a little bit closer. I think that, you know, I don't think this is a guy that you're going to see break off 60-yard runs anytime soon. I think this is a guy you're going to see make those 60-yard passes, make those throws over the field, and just unlock the offense in that way with the downfield passing threat, not so much with his legs.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. What an absurd range of comparisons, by the way. Like, I get Cam Newton and Tyrone Swoops have some similarities in terms of the way that they wanted to play the game. That's like saying, like comparing a basketball player, one guy saying he's like LeBron James and the other guy saying he's like Kent Bazemore. Like, that's just so opposite ends of the spectrum to go Cam Newton, who was a beast in college, right? Won a national championship at Auburn, won a Heisman, won a JUCO national title at Blinn. You mentioned what he pulled off in the NFL too, but just keeping it to college. And then Tyrone Swoops, who should have been a tight end throughout his college career and couldn't keep the starting job at Texas when Texas was god-awful during his college career. So that's just weird. And then the fact that neither of those comparisons even feel accurate are even weirder. So, yeah, everybody tries to come up with comps on the recruiting trail. It's just like the NFL draft, right? People try to evaluate guys, compare and contrast from college to the NFL. You see it with recruiting from high school to college, and sometimes you get some randomness like that. I'll tell you what, though, Joe. Sark better be right on this, man. He better be right on this. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I trust his ability to monitor, evaluate, and, of course, develop quarterbacks. I think he's got a pretty proven track record wherever he's been that he knows how to handle that position. But the narrative is out there, man. And Texas fans are tired of seeing QBs from the state of Texas not come to the University of Texas and have a ton of success elsewhere. Like, I know Texas offered Cade Klubnik from Westlake, but he was not a top priority. There's no secret. Malik Murphy was a top priority. I mean, Quinn Ewers was priority number one, and I still think Texas is working on Quinn Ewers a little bit. But then Malik Murphy became the priority for Texas. And Malik Murphy's a five-star. Like, I'm not saying you should be upset about that, but Joe, if this doesn't work out and Cade Klubnik goes to Clemson and continues that lineage of great Clemson quarterbacks from Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence to DJ Uyang, whatever, and then Cade Klubnik becomes next in line, then that's going to be a problem if Malik Murphy is not really, really good at Texas. So the narrative's out there, man, and obviously we'll find out the answer to whether or not Sark was right with this evaluation 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. But, man, I know there are a lot of Texas fans who were bummed out with the Cade Klubnik news that dropped, and well, that puts even more pressure on Malik Murphy and more pressure on Sark to make sure they get this thing right.
Yep, like you mentioned, the biggest unknown and the biggest knock against Malik Murphy is outside of, you know, a few games in the 2019. He hadn't really done it on the field, in pads, in real football. Everything else looks great, but everything else isn't what really matters. So these six games, I believe it starts mid-March. They play Long Beach Poly and go on play, and then they finish up with Bishop Alemany in between, and with four other games in between. Those are two pretty good California, Southern California programs. So he'll face some solid teams with some Power Five players on it. it's going to be one of it, this is probably the biggest high school season of Malik Murphy's career, and this will be his opportunity to answer questions that, like you mentioned, Steve Sarkisian needs answering. So, anything else on Murphy? There were a lot of commits in February, so we got a few more to get to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad we started with Malik Murphy, right? The 1 5-star thus far committed to Texas, and obviously the quarterback, the most important position. So, I'm glad we got some stuff out there. I'm excited, man. I think a lot of Texas fans are going to try to find ways to watch those 6 high school games that you were talking about, but can't wait to watch this kid develop, and hopefully he stays committed to Texas. It sounds like he's 100% bought in at this point, and hopefully he takes that step and becomes a really, really good high school player and can translate into a great college player too. So excited about him, but like you said, a lot of other commits in the month of February to be excited about too.
Let's keep it on the offensive side of the ball then, where Texas is the first in that month of February was Jaden Blue, a running back, the state's number one running back out of Klein Kane in the Houston area. And I am a huge fan of this pickup. I think that, you know, running back kind of cycles year over year in Texas, whether it's deep or not. I think last year was a very solid year for running back in Texas, especially when you had the top flight guys like Kamar Wheaton and LJ Johnson. And then Jonathan Brooks, who Texas ended up with, started to move into that category a little bit. And that may be why Jaden Blue chose Texas. I think he may have seen a pathway toward carries. He also probably saw what Steve Sarkisian did with Najee Harris. And I also think that this is a guy who can make some moves out of the backfield, do a little bit of everything in this offense and not just be limited to a between the tackles guy. If I remember right, one of the small, you know, questions about his game is like a whole lot of running backs. What happens when a guy who's bigger than stronger than them at the college level meets him in the hole? Is he going to be able to power through it, or is he going to, you know, kind of succumb to old habits that he made work in high school, but probably won't work at the college level. But still, anytime you can grab the number one player at a position in the state, it's always going to be a solid pickup. And this was a win for good old Stan Drayton out of the Houston area over several other top schools from around the country.
Yeah, Stan Drayton continuing to do yeoman's work on the recruiting trail. I think all Texas fans were pretty excited when Steve Sarkisian announced that Stan Drayton was going to be retained on this new coaching staff, and the fruits of that decision are already starting to pay off. Jaden Blue had offers from just about every school in the country. He's a top 50 player nationally, the top running back in the state, as you mentioned. Goes up against very, very good competition in the Houston area. Got ridiculous speed, a track star as well in high school, which you love that. And, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Najee Harris comp. I think running backs are going to be excited to play in this Steve Sarkisian offense. And I think all Texas fans are excited about what Bijan will bring to the table in this Sark offense. I don't think you're going to have to worry about splitting carries or, you know, carry limits or anything like that we dealt with Tom Herman last year. I think we've seen it from Sark pretty much everywhere he's gone, but especially at Alabama, that he's willing to ride his best running backs. And I think running backs have to like that. And running backs in Sark's offense are also a part of the passing game as well. And I think that's appealing to running backs because football nowadays, especially in the NFL, it's important to be able to catch passes out of the backfield as a running back. So you got a chance to do that in college to help prepare you more for the NFL, which is every player who commits to Texas's dream, then I think that's going to pay dividends too. So, yeah, I'm excited. I am excited. The running back position going to be big in the Sark offense. You got a couple more years of Bijan, but the fact that they are restocking that running back room for the future makes me feel really, really good.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the 2022 class. It was the 2023 class when Reuben Owens, a.k.a. the Black Unicorn, jumped in as well, starting Texas' 2023 class and giving Texas a pretty significant head-to-head win over Oklahoma in the early stages of the 2023 recruiting cycle. So Stan Drayton staying hot, you know, making sure, like you always mentioned, that Texas kids are staying in Texas. El Campo's just down State Highway 71, and, you know, that road leads directly into Austin. So it's still pretty early with his career. And, you know, I think I've said this over and over and over again. If you're playing at 3 and 4A level and you're a Power 5 player, you better obviously be the best guy on the field. Mm-hmm. And I think that holds very, very true for for Ruben Owens. You watch his film, he has elusiveness, he has some getaway speed, and he is just a great combo, a great way not only to start that 2023 class, but him right back-to-back with Jaden Blue. And you add, like we mentioned, Bijan Robinson over these next couple of years, or Sean Johnson. Sam Drayton's doing a pretty good job of adding to the running back room in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't even mention Jonathan Brooks, right? Mr. Texas Football from this past year, who has signed on for the class of 2021. Not super highly regarded on the recruiting trail, but a guy who put up ridiculous numbers in Texas high school football, and a guy who I think is going to make an impact during his Texas career. So Stan Drayton, once again, doing a really, really good job bringing in talent and keeping talent in the state of Texas. I think we got to give Sark some love, Joe, for a lot of things. But look, it's not that hard to recruit at Texas, right? Even when Texas has been losing games year in and year out like they have been over the last decade, despite all the coaching turnover. You know, Charlie Strong was able to recruit top 10 classes. Tom Herman was able to recruit top 10, even some top 3 classes as well. But the fact that, like, other recruiting rivals are doing so well right now. Like, Jimbo Fisher has things rolling at A&M. They nearly made it to the college football playoff. So you feel like momentum there should be sky high. Oklahoma continues to dominate this league. Lincoln Riley's established himself as one of the best coaches in all of college football. Like, they're recruiting. They obviously always recruit pretty well, but you'd think, like, okay, they'd have a leg up on Texas for a lot of kids in the state of Texas and a lot of kids around the area. But Sark has come in here and kind of thwarted that momentum relatively early on, and he's done a really, really good job. It's early, and none of these players have signed yet, and some of them might wait and see what happens with Texas on the field in 2021 before actually joining this 2022 class. But I feel like Sark had a little bit more against him just because of the success that recruiting rivals were having across the state and in the area. And thus far, Joe, it hasn't fazed him at all in the class of 2022, or, as you mentioned, the class of 2023 as well.
Well, this is, I think, of the last three Texas football hires with Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, and Steve Sarkisian. No one has a better resume of that three than Steve Sarkisian. No one also, I think Steve Sarkisian also had a longer head coaching resume than those two, even though he came from a coordinator position at Alabama. So I think there's a little bit more of an understanding of how the process needs to work from Steve Sarkisian. And also, you know, you can sell Teddy Bridgewater doing well in the AAC. You can sell that. And defeating, whoever Louisville defeated, was it Alabama the year that got Charlie Strong onto the national stage, I think, with Louisville? You know, you can sell beating Alabama, you know, once. Or if you're Tom Herman, you can sell the three quarterbacks at Ohio State and also Greg Ward helping to beat Florida State and Oklahoma. If you're Steve Sarkisian, you're selling a Heisman Trophy winner. You're selling, you know, multiple top five, top 10 picks at multiple positions. And yeah, that was at a different school, but, you know, it's the most recent thing you have. And also, you're the offensive guy for a defensive head coach. You can probably leverage that a little bit better. And I think that's what Steve Sarkisian is definitely doing early. And of course, like you mentioned, yeah, Oklahoma, that's a program that has it going. And they're probably going to be in contention to be the number one or number two team in all the early polls this upcoming year. Texas A&M has it going, too. We'll see if they can continue after Kellen Mond goes on to the NFL and they have to start over with a new quarterback. But, you know, guess who Texas has been recruiting against for so many of these elite prospects in the past couple of years? Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. They're still going to be around. So I think Sarkisian was smart in trying to leverage as much momentum as he possibly could. You know, what we've talked about on Inside Texas is, yeah, it's good if you have players leaning your way and saying, yeah, I really like the Longhorns. It's better if you can get those guys who are leaning your way into the boat. And I think that's what Steve Sarkisian has really done a great job of over the course of the first few months of his on the job. Anything else, or do you want to keep going through the rest of those 2022 additions?
No, let's keep going, man. There's a few more to talk about for sure.
All right, let's get there. So the other big offensive addition was wide receiver Evan Stewart. And I know you and so many other Texas fans for the last several years have always complained about not having enough speed on the field. I think the only time there was truly game-breaking elite speed on the field maybe in these past couple of years was for Devin Duvernay in 2019. I can't really think of 2017. 2018 was on a speed-based offense. 2019, you had Duvernay, and then 2020, nobody really got a chance to showcase their speed. So, and then you look around the conference and you look around the country and you see Jaylen Waddle. Oh, man. You see Devonta Smith. You see other guys all around making plays with their legs with elite speed. And that's just something Texas hasn't had. Well, Evan Stewart helps to fix that problem. He's a guy who runs sub 11 in the 100. He runs just about 21, I believe, in the 200. And he is not just a fast guy who can, you know, he's not a track star playing football. He's a football player who is really fast. He may be the top wide receiver in the state this upcoming cycle. And for Texas to beat out not only Alabama, but also Oregon and several other programs from around the country for this guy, that's a big win. And he's going to be someone who may be a test case for the name, image, and likeness sell for the Longhorns. I think Evan Stewart on social media, whether it's Instagram or even TikTok, I think he's got several hundred thousand, if not maybe a million followers.
Oh, really?
So maybe I think so.
Okay.
So I think Texas sell probably had to do a little bit more, had to do with some name, image, and likeness stuff. And, of course, Steve Sarkisian helping Devonta Smith win the Heisman at Alabama. I think you also have to give a little bit of credit to Andre Coleman and see that while he was struggling under the Tom Herman regime, he's not struggling as much under the Steve Sarkisian regime. Remember, he had the first commit in Texas 2022, under the Steve Sarkisian era with Armani Winfield. So Evan Stewart is just an evidence, I think, of Texas hitting all the right notes in a commitment or in a prospect, winning out against other programs, and then, like I mentioned earlier, getting those guys maybe leaning your way to fully jump into the boat.
Yeah, Andre Coleman, for me, was the most questionable hire that Steve Sarkisian made on his initial coaching staff. But so far, on the recruiting trail, at least, Andre Coleman has done a phenomenal job. Now, I'm going to hold my judgment until the actual season begins because I need to see better play from these wide receivers, right? That was a huge issue last year with this Texas football team, is that wide receivers just couldn't get open, and Sam had nowhere to go with the football. Now, I'm sure a lot of that had to do with Sam. I'm sure more of that had to do with Tom Herman and his scheme. But still, for me, the jury's still out on Andre Coleman. But thus far, as a recruiter, he's done a very, very good job in this cycle. And I'll tell you what, Joe, I mean, outside of the obvious two, Alabama and Clemson, because you understand anybody in the country at any position wanting to play for either of those schools. For me, moving forward, I think Texas and Oklahoma could be the spots for wide receivers across the country. Like, if Sark can replicate, is going to be tough, because last year's Alabama offense was arguably the best in college football history. And there are some efficiency metrics that say they were the best in college football history. And for my money, it was the best offense in the history of the sport. So I don't know if you could exactly replicate that, especially in year one. But if Sark's offense can be anywhere close to what it was at Alabama these last couple of years, that offense and then Lincoln Riley's offense up in Norman, dude, every receiver in the country is going to want to play for those two schools. Because you mentioned all the great receivers Alabama had. Yeah, those guys were studs in high school, but Sark's offense did such a great job of scheming them open, and all of those guys got the football, Joe. All of those guys were getting the football. So it's not just how we go to one guy over and over and over again. The wealth is spread. So you could see, if things go right, Texas could be bringing in like four and five-star wide receivers seemingly every year if they wanted to. Because I think if this offense is anything close to what it was at Alabama, then wide receivers are going to want to play here. And you're already seeing that with Armani Winfield and Evan Stewart, too. So a lot of reasons to be excited about the future of skill position talent, especially on offense at Texas.
Yep. Looks like Dennis Simmons, Oklahoma's wide receivers coach, and Andre Coleman are going to be having quite a few battles over the next couple of years. So should be a lot of fun. And, you know, that also means that Texas is going to have to make up ground in the DFW area. And it seems like they're starting to, considering who their other two commits in the month of March. They're on the defensive side of the ball, considering who they were. You went ahead and got Alito safety Brian Allen. I've seen his name is BJ Allen, but Brian Allen out of Alito, and then also linebacker from Arlington Martin, continuing the Arlington Martin pipeline, it appears, with Trevell Johnson. And I think what is important about both these two players is not only their fit within the league and that these guys are made for Big 12 play. You got Brian Allen, who can, you know, kind of move all over the field and did several different things for the state championship winning Bearcats. But Trevell Johnson's the type of guy who may not have linebacker size right now, but he's a guy who can get to linebacker size in college. And I think he's already playing a good amount of linebacker like you would want him to be doing on a Big 12 defense for the Warriors right now. So these are two very good fit recruits. I think they're all obviously they're pretty talented as well. I think both are in the 4-star range on the various services. But these are guys who help you defend against those Lincoln Riley offenses in the Big 12 and those other offenses in the Big 12 as well. You got to do it on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that this proves is that, you know, guys like Jeff Choate, the linebackers coach from originally from Montana State, and also Blake Gideon and Terry Joseph, those were guys who they had some questions about. There were questions about their recruiting ability. And I think these guys who are starting out with these commits and are setting themselves up for a pretty strong March and maybe April as well, you knew what you were getting in some of the other coaches' defensive coaches' recruiting ability. Gideon and Choate and even Terry Joseph a little bit, there were some questions about it. And with these commits, they're answering those questions in a real strong way.
So far, so good. And look, I was excited about Blake Gideon as a recruiter coming to Texas. I know he's pretty young, and I've got questions about his on-field coaching just because he's young and inexperienced, and this is far and away the biggest job that he's ever had as a coach. But on the recruiting trail, man, I figured Blake Gideon was going to crush it. Partially because he's from the area, he played at the University of Texas, so he can relay his experiences playing high-major college football, also playing at the University of Texas, and everything that goes into being a student-athlete at the University of Texas, and all that you can benefit from while playing football at the University of Texas. I figured Blake Gideon was going to present that in homes for these recruits, or I guess over Zoom calls for the most part these days. But that dude, to me, is passionate about the University of Texas. He's passionate about his craft, and I think he's going to do a really, really good job on the recruiting trail for Texas. But yeah, you need some dudes on defense going up against Lincoln Riley and some of the other great offensive minds in this conference. You talked about B.J. Allen or Brian Allen Jr., whatever we're calling him. That guy, a former LSU commit, got offers from all over the country, and it kind of felt like he was down between Texas and Oklahoma. So you call that a win, and that is the DFW Metroplex, which has kind of been dominated by OU, as you mentioned, Joe. So excited about that get. You would love DBU to go back to being DBU because that has not been the case over the last decade. Hopefully Brian Allen Jr. can make that happen. And then Trevell Johnson. I mean, the linebacker position, so, so important in Pete Kwiatkowski's defense. And there's not a lot of depth at linebacker on this current roster for Texas, Joe. And I know Trevell Johnson isn't going to be here this year, right? He's a class of 2022 kid, but you got to restock that linebacker room a little bit. You feel good about DeMarvion Overshown, showed some great things last year. You feel pretty good about Juwan Mitchell. You've got your two starters coming back at that spot. That's great, but you know, not a lot of depth. I know Texas attacks the transfer portal to bring in some linebackers. Some of those guys project more as edge-type players than inside middle linebackers, but you got to restock that room in Pete Kwiatkowski's defense. Linebackers are very, very important in this conference and in Kwiatkowski's defensive scheme. So getting one early is pretty good, and I think Texas is going to be after a few more guys at that position too.
Do you know who the last commit from Alito to go to Texas was?
Last commit from Alito to go to Texas. I do not. Who is it?
I think it's Jonathan Gray, which kind of shows how long it's been for a program that puts out several Power 5 prospects every year and, of course, competes for state titles over and over and over and wins them, too. So it's been a while. It's been since Jonathan Gray. He was, what, in the 2009 class, something like that, maybe the 2010 class? Not even this decade, not even the last decade even. So it's been a while since Texas went to a true powerhouse and got one of their better players. They've tried. Huh. They've tried at least over several years within the Tom Herman era. They've always landed up empty. But Terry Joseph, Blake Gideon, and Steve Sarkisian ended that little spell. Anything else on the recruiting trail? I think we hit everybody who made their way, decided to put their name to the Longhorns in the month of February. They should be able to add a couple more throughout the month of March. Anything else, or you want to talk some hardball?
Jonathan Gray, 2012 recruiting class.
2012. Okay.
There you go. That's good. No, I mean, I liked hearing that you said there's some momentum building and maybe some more good news coming Texas's way over the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are plenty of prospects who have kind of started to settle on when they want to make an announcement. Mm-hmm. And it always changes. Some want to make an announcement in the spring, get it done. A lot are just waiting to be able to go on visits. And the NCAA keeps pushing back the dead period, unsure if they're even going to be able to see officially, you know, the school they want to attend. So, you know, this is a strange recruiting cycle. I think, of course, it's going to open up eventually. There's no way, unless just the NCAA is stupidly risk averse, that the debt period is going to last all the way to the second or to that first national signing day. I wouldn't put it past the NCAA.
Yep.
But I think with the way, you know, the way things seem to be trending overall, things are going to be able to open up a little bit more, including to allow stuff like visits for college prospects to happen. So, but until there's a solid answer on that, it's kind of unknown. Some of these timelines are completely up in the air based off of that, but some of these timelines have been shifted a little bit thanks to some pushing, maybe from some college coaches as well.
I love it. All right, let's talk some baseball, man.
Yeah, we didn't get to do our normal preview show because of all the different stuff that has gone on. I know Scipio loves talking Longhorn baseball, and you know, sometimes they have to get Kevin in. But, you know, this is a very significant year for Texas baseball. It's immensely talented, started their season in the top 10, has fallen out after really struggling badly against some SEC teams in Arlington in the new Globe Life Park. But it's early. It's still early. They still have some quality games to prove themselves with on this schedule. And then they're going to have a tough Big 12 schedule. I think you always have to look at Lubbock. You always have to look at Fort Worth and even have to start looking in Norman about where the big challenges for this baseball team is going to arrive. But here's what they do have this year as far as things that will help them out. Number one, they have a potential first-round draft pick pitcher. Ty Madden, he may have struggled in that first start. That second start against BYU might have been one of the better pitching performances I've seen at Dish Falk Field. He had no hit through six innings, did not get extended much after that. I think he finished that seventh inning maybe, and that was it. So Texas has an incredible Friday night guy who gives them a good chance to go into every weekend series 1-0. They've got good enough fielding. There's some areas that they could probably stand to have better answers for. And I think that would have to be second base, at least right now, because that kind of seems to be a rotating door between guys like Dylan Campbell and Murphy Staley. But here's what they need. They need these experienced bats, of which there are several, could play like experienced bats. Zach Zubia, he's got to be a rock in that order. Trey Faltini, they expect a lot out of him.
Yeah.
He had 1 year of experience, and he's a guy who has face of the program capabilities and persona. He's got to play like it. He brings a great glove to the field and showed off some really nice plays in that early series, but he's got to start hitting. And he did a little bit against BYU and also against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I think there have been two surprises as far as the offense. And number one is that Austin Todd just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And that's a guy that you were happy to get back. You were anticipating him being a guy at the top of the lineup, maybe even second in the lineup, that would, you know, be able to start you off over and over. However, a guy who I think is surprising in a good way a little bit is Cam Williams.
Yeah.
He goes by Hammer with the team, has really showed off some power, and has really helped Texas solidify a question at that third base spot that might have been Andre Duplantier's heading into the year. He unfortunately had to get an elbow surgery, I believe, in the fall. So he is going to be on the shelf for this year. that was a big question spot. And Cam Williams has come in and really, really solidified himself as a great switch hitting option there at the hot corner. And I didn't mention one other guy who's a newcomer, but he's not much of a surprise. Mike Mantico's hitting the ball real well at the top of the order. Mm-hmm. A St. John's transfer. Big East? He earned accolades in the Big East last year. Transferred during the midst of quarantine and the shutdown last year, I think in April and March. And so he's a guy who I wouldn't say he's surprising. I think they expected this out of him. But so far through, after recovering from a very, very tough and difficult and kind of poor showing to open the year, has started to find his bat a little bit and is doing well out in the field as well. So that's kind of the rundown I see. Pitching, at least finding second and third guys, is going to be something that, you hope is solved throughout the course of this year. They thought it'd be Pete Hansen, but David Pierce said over and over that, he had COVID interruptions and is still not fully back up to speed yet, I think, which is why you're seeing him get some midweek starts instead of some weekend opportunities. But, it's kind of interesting that at this point, the questions are, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, the bats are kind of the known, at least, against some of the tougher competition that they played, but figuring out the pitching is going to be an ongoing process throughout the year, especially the bullpen pitching.
Yeah, it's early, right? And a lot of Longhorn fans were left with a sour taste in their mouths after that weekend in Arlington. But I tried to warn Texas baseball fans going into that weekend that your expectations should be kind of low, because that was the weekend after the ice storm here in Central Texas. So nobody could practice. And God, I assume the players' heads were elsewhere, thinking about their families and whether or not they had power or water at their places or at their parents' places. Like, there was just a lot going on, and not being able to practice before going up against three of the best teams in the country, that's tough. That is tough. So, look, I don't think you should put too much stock into an opening weekend anyways, but with all of the extracurricular stuff going on surrounding this team, I didn't put that much. I wasn't too upset or crushed by what happened in Arlington. But for a lot of fans, it's like, well, now Texas hasn't really played anybody since then. Like, BYU's not that good. I'm glad Texas won 3 of 4. There were some Longhorn fans who were looking for a sweep, and hell, Texas had a great opportunity. They had a 4-0 lead in that series finale last Saturday. They couldn't get it done. But then, yeah, A&M Corpus Christi last night. You've got Texas State tonight. Like, it's just people are going to wait and see how Texas looks against better competition, because the one time we saw this team play against good competition this year, the Horns came up short. But I agree. Your player breakdown was spectacular. Cam Williams has been fantastic, the most consistent bat in Texas's lineup to this point. Zach Zubia starting to come on as of late. How about an inside-the-park home run and a triple in back-to-back games for Zach Zubia? Do I have that right?
Evan Gaddis-like out there.
It's unbelievable, man. Yeah, that guy not known for his speed, but he's been finding a way to get those extra base hits piled together. So you need him. You need him to be consistent, that big bat in the middle of your order. Glad you brought up Mikey Antico. Love that name. Mikey Antico. I love that name. Excited about what he can bring to the table. You mentioned it, got off to a slow start. Everybody got off to a slow start in Arlington, but seems like he's picked it up as of late, hit his first homer in a Texas uniform against A&M Corpus last night. I will add one more name, though, that I don't think you mentioned, and if you did, Joe, I'm sorry, but got to give some love to Tanner Witt at this point, who I think is only at Texas because of the COVID-19 pandemic, a combination of a 5-round MLB draft this past year, and I can't remember what the other part of that combination was. But regardless,
I think that is the combination. I think it's the 5-round draft.
Yeah.
He was definitely a guy who, two-way player at the college level, I think would have ended up being a pitcher right away. But yeah, that was one of those, kind of like Ty Madden. I think Ty Madden even though he was a late draftee, was a signing risk. Mm-hmm. He still ended up at Texas. And of course, like you mentioned, COVID-19, that 5-round draft, that is probably a very big reason why he is wearing a Longhorn uniform right now.
Maybe not a combination of things. Maybe it's just that, but I agree 100%. And Texas is lucky to have him. He looks really, really good right now. Joe, what do you think Tanner Witt's role is going to be this year? I assume and I hope down the road over his next 2 years at UT, he's going to be a starter and hopefully a top of the rotation potential Friday night starter here in Austin. But for this year, do you Would you rather him be maybe a Saturday, Sunday guy if things don't work out for Tristan Stevens? Or would you rather him be in the bullpen and maybe like that multiple inning closer who you know you can rely on late in games to get you some important outs? I mean, it's early on, but Tanner Witt has looked really, really good, and it looks like you might have something great with that young man.
I think you definitely have him pitching, and I think David Pierce is going to do as much. I know they grabbed some at-bats for him in the past few games, but they know he's a pitching-type guy. And I think that, you know, while I appreciate Palmer Wenzel, the UTSA transfer, has shown some good stuff out of the bullpen, I think if you can have a guy who can do that multi-inning role, and Tanner Witt seems equipped to be able to do that and do it effectively, you let him. But, oh, man, that has me thinking again. Imagine the back-to-back of Tanner Witt and then Andre Duplantier. Those are two talented young guys who nothing seems to faze them on the mound. And that would have been formidable for anybody to go against and a pitching duo that any Texas starter would be happy to hand the ball to. You know, I really don't know. I think that you have to at least let him get some opportunities starting, and maybe that happens in some midweek series. But, you know, at the same time, you have to get him up to be able to go through college lineups twice, maybe even three times. So I think right now to have him be at the back end of the bullpen may be the right call, but eventually you're going to see him move, you know, maybe into maybe he gets to Sunday this year after – you know, if things don't shake out right with Pete Hansen and any of the other potential guys. So yeah. I think what you do right now is you have him at that back end of the bullpen, let him be that multi-inning role, build up, maybe steal some Wednesday starts for him if that's something that you're looking for. But I think, obviously, he's going to be asked to do a lot more pitching than hitting this year. And this is one of those things. This is a guy that you don't want to, you know, use up too soon. I know – you know, with football, you're like, throw that guy in right now. Let's get him going. You've got to build him up, especially with arm strength, especially with pitching at this level. And I think you let him get some seasoning out in the bullpen first before you start letting him go through the order twice, maybe even three times.
Okay, Tom Herman. I see what you're doing there. You got to rest a guy. You got to ease him in. You can't give a freshman too many reps. I see you. I see you, but I actually agree with you in baseball. So, yeah, man, I'm excited. Look, I mean, maybe this is not an Omaha team just yet, but long way to go this season. It's a talented, deep Big 12 once again, so the Longhorns will have plenty of opportunities to prove themselves. I definitely think this is a postseason caliber team, and when you get to the postseason, anything can happen in college baseball. So, once again, I know fans frustrated with what took place in Arlington, but I think this team is going to be fine. Texas State tonight, a trip down to Houston. You're going to be at those games, hopefully, down at the U of H. And then South Carolina next weekend. I assume South Carolina's good, Joe. I don't know if they are. I know they've won a couple of College World Series within the last two decades, so I figure they're going to be pretty good in the non-con. But after that, it's a dive into the Big 12 and a lot of talented teams on the slate for the Horns.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I did want to mention, I put this into my preview piece that I posted before that weekend series, is that I think a lot of people just have the taste of 27-27 stuck in their mouth when it comes to looking at David Pierce.
Yeah.
And I completely understand that. I remember talking to you and Trey. Y'all asked me to grade that season, and I gave it an F. You should not miss the postseason when you're at Texas. And, of course, I think that Omaha appearance in the year prior helped him out. But this was a solid team last year. They stumbled against, again, SEC opponents. But other than that, had done a very good job of beating the teams on their schedule and handling them well until the shutdown occurred. But people are overlooking that. It wasn't a complete season. It's not something for, you know, easy for them to grade David Pierce upon. And so that's why they maybe look back to that 2019 season and are holding him to that standard. And I think that's also justifiable, too. It's Texas baseball. You've made Omaha half the times they've had Omaha. You should expect to be able to go there pretty regularly. I think this team, if they're not, I don't want to say hosting a super regional because, you know, it's baseball and there's a lot that can happen. And there's good teams in this conference and the SEC and even starting a little bit more in the Big Ten these days.
Yeah.
But I think this is a team that if they're not playing in a super regional, then, you know, I'm not exactly sure Let me put it this way. They should be playing in the Super Regional, and they should have a chance to go to Omaha in a three-game series. And I think if they don't make it that far, you got to, you know, maybe there's some extenuating circumstances, but you got to wonder with this team why it didn't happen this year.
So you think they should be hosting a regional?
I think they're definitely good enough to be a regional host team. I'm blanking in my brain real quick. It's 8 national seeds. There we go. And then 16 total regional hosts.
Right.
So, yeah, they should definitely be hosting a regional. Winning the conference, as we've seen, basically automatically puts you in that top 8 seed range. I don't know if they'll be able to do that this year. Just the way they've started, not poorly, but maybe not elitely. But this is a team that I think should definitely be playing with a chance to go to Omaha, like I said, in a 3-game set. I think that, you know, if they get bumped into regional, that'd be a disappointment. If they're not hosting, you know, they can play through that. That would be a disappointment. So this is a huge year for David Pierce. He knows it. Every coach knows that every year is huge for them. But, you know, it's time for the players to play the games. And they've won half of them, lost half of them thus far. And we'll have, you know, solid tests over the course of the next few weeks until they get to conference play. And there are, what, 4 or 5 teams out of, I think, the 9 Big 12 baseball teams that are ranked right now with or something like that, always in that contention. So it's going to be a tough road, but they should have the pieces and the, you know, everything else to be able to navigate through it.
Shameless plug for the radio station. You can catch those games on 104.9 The Horn and the Horn app. And there you go. Anything else, Joe? We got some basketball, we got some football, we got some baseball. The big three covered. Anything else? You want to talk softball, women's basketball, volleyball? Come on, man. Let's keep rolling.
Let's go. I'll give you one on each thing. Softball, man, it would have been nice to see Miranda Ellis play, but I think Mike White has a pretty solid team going over there. Volleyball, the shortened fall, you know, that really, really stinks. But, hey, spring volleyball, it may not be a bad thing for them to occupy some, you know, not have to take oxygen from football season. And then women's basketball, first year for Vic Schaefer, but I think we all have to be able to appreciate what Charlie Collier's doing. And I know maybe people aren't big on the WNBA or women's basketball in general, but, you know, when you got a player who is talked about as a top 5, maybe top 10 pick in her sports respective draft, that's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And she's doing some impressive things. I'm glad that she's getting some of the, you know, I think she was a flip from UConn way back in the day. She chose Texas over Gina Auriemma and UConn. So, glad to see her excelling in what could be her final year in Burnt Orange.
She's a stud, man. Good stuff. Is there a more versatile podcast? I don't think there is. It's what we do here on the 1-0 podcast. Anything else you want to mention, Joe?
Men's golf. I don't know about I'm lost if we get there. I know men's golf has Walker Cup guys, and track is doing well. It's not a bad time to be a Longhorn fan if you're a fan of every single sport, but I know that the ones we talked about today are what people are focusing on. Mm-hmm. And yet again, it's still not a bad time to be a Longhorn fan if you're only looking at the big three men's sports.
Good stuff. All right, that's going to do it for us. Appreciate y'all listening to the 1-0 podcast. Appreciate y'all's continued support. Definitely follow Joe on Twitter at JosephCook89. Check out the great work that he does over at InsideTexas.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Brad Kellner and listen to the Triple Option with RBKD weekdays from 3 to 7 on the Horn and HornFM.com. Thanks again to our sponsors, Audiovisual Consultations and Altstadt Beer. Once again, thanks to you. We'll be back next week talking more Texas football, Texas hoops, Texas baseball, and whatever the hell surfaces around the 40 acres. That's going to do it for us. For Joe Cook, I am BK Brad Kellner. Y'all stay safe, y'all stay healthy, and hook 'em.